Okay, it's January 25th, 2025, and you're tuned to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. Having a little bit of difficulty right now. It's been a while. My name's Michael Welch, and I'm going to talk about, well, the show is it's devoted to community nutrition with Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in the community, as well as other interests in this one-hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we contact the dots that make up our world. Every morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutrition recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in the mainstream media. The time right now is 8:04, and the temperature, I'll just have a look here. It is apparently what is the temperature here? Got everything but Manitoba. Isn't that interesting?
Well.
Okay. You gotta forgive me. I don't do the show regularly all that often anymore. I do it remotely, so I'm not used to this kind of stuff. Anyway, I'll figure out the... I can give you weather from other parts of the world. Anyway, let's go right on.
It's a mild morning.
Okay. Hi, Mary Jane. How you doing?
Oh, good. Yes. Oh, well, thank you, Michael, for filling in.
For sure.
John is out there in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And do we have our guest on? Has she come in, or we're just trying to...
Well, let's see. Okay.
Oh, good.
Okay, just give us a second. I got to switch off this stuff here. Good. Okay, that's one off. Okay. There.
And then we have a Wooden Spoons theme song. Maybe
okay.
That's the other thing. Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
This is...
Okay. So, yeah, Linda's on the line.
Okay. Can we see her? Well, it's okay. We see the guest, and okay. Well, we'll just proceed. Linda, are you there?
Oops. Oh, I might have shut her off. Oh no.
Oh no.
Okay, hold on a second. I'll just.
We'll okay. Try to get her back on.
Yeah, well, you can just maybe introduce her. I'll get her back.
Okay, so this morning we are going to be joined. We hope we are joined with Reverend Linda Trono, who had been our guest on December 20th, 2024, to talk about her past work in the community when she served as the community minister for 10 years at West Broadway Community Ministry, located at Crossways and Common at 222 Furby Street. Today, we will be continuing our discussion and will be focusing on Linda's present work involving environmental issues, especially climate change, for which she has a passion. So, I'd like to welcome Linda to this program. And we are... Okay. This is a morning of experimentation and adventure. And it's
Hello?
Oh, hello.
We're sorry. Your call did not go through. Will you please hang up and try your call again?
Goodness. So sorry about this.
Well, that's not your fault, Michael. Somebody should have set you up first.
Yeah.
That assumptions. As we are continuing to... Oh, It's not your fault. Kathy should have, she should have done it. Not assuming. I'm just wondering what.
Hello.
She's calling.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me, Linda?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, maybe we can. Maybe we could go forward with this program. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sorry about
I'm not sure. Yeah, it keeps hanging up and saying no one else is joining the call. So let's just try.
Let's just give it a try. Do we have any? We need to have the volume up here, I think. Because I can't hear you that well. Oh, I think that's better. Okay, Linda. Well, we introduced you already. Can you hear me? Okay.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Yeah. Now we've got volume.
Okay.
So thank you for joining us again, and okay, just to start off. I had already introduced you what we're going to be talking about on this program. And so, following the lead of Manitoba Energy and Justice Coalition, a nonprofit organization that advocates for climate change strategies, you are promoting investment in wind, solar, and geothermal power. So, do you want to just describe each of these systems of power?
Yeah, you know what I'd like to do. This is very involved with the issue of climate change and our response to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wondered if I could just start by telling you why I'm doing this, and then I'll tell you why this particular campaign with the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
Yeah. So I am. So I'm a retired minister. I am devoting my retirement, besides working with my, you know, having fun with my grandchildren and doing all kinds of good things, fun things. I am devoting my time to working on issues of climate because I think it is the defining issue of our generation. I think we are facing something that's way bigger than a world war, and I think everybody needs to be thinking about how they're going to respond and what they're going to do to help change this thing around. I have two grandchildren, and in the year 2050, they're going to be in their 30s, and I'm just afraid that they are not going to have the opportunities that I've had. I think life is going to get a lot harder as we move along in this unstable era of climate. So I can't think of anything better to do with my, you know, remaining 20 years than try and turn the Titanic around instead mm-hmm. of going straight into the iceberg, right?
Yes, yeah. That's a good analogy. So,
it's connected to every single issue, right? It's like the people who are living in poverty are the ones who are going to suffer the most from this, and we're all going to have difficulty with affordability. There's going to be, you know, wars have already been started because people are on the move, and drought and food shortages. And I just, anyway, so that's why I am, I'm one of the places I'm involved is the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition. So So, and they have this campaign that's called the Power Up Campaign. And what we're trying to do is to urge government to invest in wind, solar, and geothermal. Okay, mm-hmm. That's one of the things. So it's individual homeowners are already doing a lot of this, particularly geothermal and solar, what are those things called? The air source heat pumps. That's another popular thing. But governments need to do it. And so that's key to what we're trying to do, is get governments to take this on in a very serious and urgent way.
Yes. So. Okay. So maybe when you're looking at these systems individually, maybe you could just speak about them in more detail. Do you want to begin with solar energy, for instance? What does solar energy entail, and what might the weakness and that sort? There's each one of them has its own, maybe downsides, I suppose.
Yeah. So every energy source has its downsides, but they all have more of an upside than fossil fuels have.
Okay.
So I just. And I'm not a technical expert on everything, but what I can tell you, I have in the house that I used to live in, we installed a geothermal, and what it does is it takes the energy, the warmth from the earth, like that's down there, and it never changes, and it heats up water that heats through a water furnace that heats your house. And then in the summer, it cools your house. So you have a built-in system. You don't have to get air conditioners because it is cooler than it is outside down under the earth. So the geothermal is the absolute best way to go in terms of energy efficiency and constant things. My son lives in that house right now, and after 22 years, the geothermal is still functioning really well. So,
You said the geothermal is both hotter and it's also colder. How does that work? You said it was hot in the winter.
Yeah, the earth down in the earth, it's at a constant temperature. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's like, say, I don't know. I think it's around 50 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what the Celsius is, but so what that does is it's either cooler in the summer. The earth under the earth is cooler than it is outside, and so it's taking the energy from the earth and cooling your house. And in the winter, it's hotter under the earth than it is outside, so it heats your house, and it needs a boost. Especially when it's really cold, it needs a boost from electricity.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm having a hard time to understand how it could be hot and then cold. But I'll just take your word for it.
it's fabulous.
Yeah,
it's a really good system.
It's a very interesting concept for sure, and I imagine it would be fairly expensive to install.
So what we're looking at when we're talking about geothermal, we're not talking about every individual homeowner getting a geothermal. We're talking about a public utility grid that's geothermal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like in places like Iceland, where there's lots of volcanic activity, they run entire cities on geothermal.
That's amazing.
Right now, a lot of the First Nations in Manitoba are having geothermal grids installed because they're not attached to the natural gas lines, right? So they don't heat their homes with natural gas. They use electricity and wood and all kinds of different things. But it's way cheaper for them and way better for the environment to have a geothermal grid. So I know there's a number of those going in. And rural some rural areas as well are getting those. So I know there's a proposal. This is fascinating stuff, and it's scientific stuff, and it's hard to get your head around, but it's like a hockey rink takes heat out of the system in order to freeze the hockey rink. So every hockey rink that we have could be used to heat all the houses in the area around it. In the neighborhood right now, it's just being blown out and the energy is being wasted, but we need to start thinking in a smarter way than we are right now, because our greenhouse gas emissions are just going crazy. Yeah, so that's geothermal. It is a fantastic system, and there's lots of people who are doing it now, so it's worth looking up if you want to have one for your own house. My guess is it's around $20,000 to install one.
Mm-hmm. So, which doesn't seem exorbitant, really. I mean, when you think of it. It doesn't seem exorbitant when you think of it. You know, it's like the cost of a car, something like that.
Yeah, that's right. And what it does is it saves you on your heating bills, right? And your cooling bills. Now all of a sudden your house is air conditioned. So
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You're listening to CQW 95.9 FM, and we're talking to our guest, Reverend Linda Trono, and I'm here with Michael Welch. Do you have any comment to make, Michael?
Yeah, Linda, just so everybody understands, I mean, you say that the heat comes from the core of the earth to heat up homes, right?
Well, it doesn't go down to the core.
Oh, yeah, well, deeper inside, yeah.
Under the ground, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's where the heat comes from, yeah.
Yeah. And if it applied too broadly, I mean, like, why does that not heat up? Like, if it's aren't you heating? I mean, they say greenhouse gases are responsible for, or primarily responsible for heating up the earth. But I mean, if you built these things too broadly, I mean, wouldn't that also add heat to the atmosphere? Except it's coming from the earth, or is there?
Not like what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Except, you know, when you have to use electricity, if you're using gas, if you're using fossil fuels, that's what's causing the greenhouse gases, is fossil fuel.
Like coal.
There naturally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like coal, natural gas, oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you say, like, in the summertime, it's going to kind of cool down, just like the deep underground, like a basement sort of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay, how long have you been how has your project been going along? You say that already a lot of indigenous people indigenous reserves have already started on this projects of creating these geothermal systems, right?
Yeah, well, I know that there's a number of First Nations who've had them installed.
Okay.
I mean, it's not my project. It's just something that I'm aware of. There's a lot of stuff going on in response to climate, and what we're trying to do is get Manitoba to get on the wagon and start doing a bit more than they're doing already, and Winnipeg.
Okay.
So we were talking about geothermal power. Do you want to talk about solar power?
You know what? Solar power is wonderful because it comes from the sun, and the sun is always there.
Yes.
And for my lifetime anyway, and it's going to be there, and it generates power, except at nighttime. So I have friends who have solar panels on their roof, and they heat their house with electricity, and they generate more electricity from the solar panels than they can use, and so that energy goes back into the grid, and other people can use it. I think that happens to a certain extent in Manitoba as well, but people in Nova Scotia that I know of, the power there, they buy it back the power grid there buys it back and sells it to other people as electricity. So you become your own generator when you have solar panels.
Wow. I thought that the solar panels, it was more dependent on whether there was sun or cloud. If it was a cloudy day, you wouldn't have that much energy from
the
sun.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and at nighttime. And if you haven't cleared the snow off them, too.
Okay.
So there are some difficulties, but people are developing ways to store power, or it goes back into the public grid. I think part of this is to not be thinking about all these expenses as individuals, right? The idea is to get these as public mm-hmm. utilities. And there are towns in Alberta that run on solar energy. We don't hear about those.
No, we don't. I'll have to ask my daughter. She lives in Calgary. I'll ask her about that. Did you have anything, Michael, you wanted?
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of, like going around the world, they're trying to develop areas into, major areas where you can, have solar or build panels like across vast expanses and have that collect energy as well. And is that something that you're endorsing, for places like Africa as well? Is it something that all forms of solar energy, or are you maybe having reservations about it in terms of?
We are focusing on Manitoba.
Yeah, for sure.
Manitoba, and so there's a lot going on in the world, and we're just trying to catch up with the rest of the world. We have a lot of sun here, and we've got a lot of wind. And I do not. I know that there's a lot of. If you go to Europe, there's wind power everywhere, and you see it somewhat here too. But Europe is way ahead of us, and we've got a lot of catching up to do in terms of generating power in a way that's not causing greenhouse gas emissions or too many greenhouse gas emissions.
Of course, so. We also, that the Netherlands, that was the place where all the windmills were first started. And I had an uncle that in my childhood, he passed away, of course, but he had his own windmill. He was about the only person in our town that had a windmill, and he used to generate power. That's before there was electricity. I've come from the time where we didn't even have electricity, and they had a bulb in the ceiling of the house on this top floor, and it gave them light, and he knew how to do it. So it was that was from a windmill that he had on top of his roof on the log house.
Yeah, that's cool.
yeah, I always remember that. So, but now we're talking about wind energy. I guess the thing I was thinking about was that birds get hit by the windmills that are up there. Isn't there a problem with birds being killed? Or have you heard of that?
Yeah. I am not an expert on wind, and I'm not an expert on anything. But what I'm assuming is that the government is going to be, they have tons of experts working on this stuff already, and as well as all kinds of universities, all kinds of people doing research about the best ways. I think we are always looking for ways to improve how we interact with nature, because we are part of it. And so we've got to take those kinds of things into concern and do the best that we can. Right now, when I think of the harm to animals, I think of the tar sands in Alberta and how they have these great big tailing ponds full of sludge and disgusting oil-filled carcinogenic water.
Exactly.
And so they have guns going off to scare the birds away from it, because the birds can't tell that it's full of oil. right?
Yeah, so because they land in it and they get covered full of oil. I remember seeing information on that. And then the people are trying to help the birds and trying to clean them, taking the oil off them. It's just pathetic.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so anything that we do, I think, does have repercussions in some way, but we try to minimize it, and that's the idea of this, and try to have experts involved who know what they're doing and that aren't just in it for profit. They're in it for the public good, and that's what we need to focus on.
There's a lot of talk about having, I mean, maybe this will come across to you from your perspective as like not an issue for you, but I know that, like, in terms of the public opinion, it seems to have in some sense turned against the carbon tax, which is supposed to be about reducing our emissions of carbon dioxide. I'm wondering if you're experiencing any of that sort of like a kind of a pushback, or you, I mean, even Stephen Guilbeault, who's the environmental minister, former environmental activist, who just a couple of days ago backed off of the carbon tax. So it looks like the government is not going to have it very much longer. I mean, is your campaign experiencing any kind of feedback, or do you kind of agree with that position? What's your take on that?
So I think the carbon rebate has gotten a bad rap, first of all, from certain political parties who are just trying to capitalize on people's desire for money.
Disinformation, basically.
But well, it's disinformation, and it's because we all got it back. If you were somebody who had no car and was taking public transit, you're getting $600 a year from the government, right? Everybody got it in their bank account. If you paid taxes, you got all that money back. And so what the intention of it was as the price of gas went up, you were encouraged to change your heating source or take public transit or bike more often, spend less money on gas. So in my opinion, I don't think it was enough. Like, I think what they need to do is cap emissions or cap production of that, of fossil fuels. And we got to start it now and go and slowly wean ourselves off it, because we can't just do it all of a sudden, right? We have to start now. And some people are starting, but Manitoba has not made a good start. When the NDP government came in, they charged us less money for gas, so more and more people are encouraged to buy gas for a whole year, right? It's just crazy. We need to be getting off gas, not buying more.
So you're recommending banning natural gas in new buildings? How would that go about? First of all, I'm thinking that there's not enough public information about these sources of energy, and the government, does it have a responsibility to do that, or is that the public's work to explore those systems and the importance of them? So I know there's separate questions here.
I think everybody has a responsibility to inform themselves. I mean, it doesn't hurt for government to put out stuff about what's happening and what natural gas is, but the government has invested over the years all kinds of money in natural gas infrastructure, right? So we have pipes going all through the city of Winnipeg, right? And they go into our houses, and we have little meters so they can charge us for our gas. Eventually, we're not going to be able to use those, right? Because it's going to be very expensive, and it's going to run out, and so we should be limiting our consumption of natural gas. If we build new houses and just build more natural gas infrastructure, that is a really bad investment. So any new housing should have geothermal put in from the beginning. Right, because then if you can put it in the ground, in advance, it costs way less than having to put it in afterwards. So you put it in from the beginning, and then you build your apartment building, and it heats your and cools your apartment building, and that's a way, and this will do much more for people's utility bills. And so if we ban natural gas in new buildings, not in ones that are already running on it, those will have to be weaned off. But if we just say, let's stop doing it now, then that saves us all kinds of trouble.
It's very practical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are... You've got, I guess, church congregations and individuals who are entering into conversations with their banks about divesting from fossil fuels, right? Are there any mm-hmm. banks that stand out in their support for oil and gas?
So just before we go there, I wanna talk, just say to your listeners that this thing about powering up is called the campaign for the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition is called Power Up Manitoba. And if you go to the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition website, you can sign on to a petition to petition the government to start investing in our future. So I just want that to okay. be a possibility for people.
Good plug.
Okay. So, so the banks. I'll tell you about the banks. Because Canada continues to invest in fossil fuels, like with the Trans-Canada, Trans Mountain Link, the banks are also investing in new infrastructure. So they're putting more pipelines down so that they can sell this poisonous stuff to other places, like the States, and they're wanting to send it across the ocean and dig it up and cause all kinds of more greenhouse gas emissions. So banks are funding that. And, I mean, when I say we, I mean environmentalists overall are saying you've got to stop investing in new infrastructure. And we've got to be weaning off the old stuff because we're destroying the planet. And so my big objection with people investing in fossil fuels is that you're making a profit off the destruction of the planet. Right. And I can't think of anything more evil. Well, maybe investing in armaments is just as evil. investing in killing people and making money from it. But that's exactly what we're doing. Right.
Mm.
And so, like, we're trying to get people to go to their bank, say, am I invested in fossil fuel? This money that I'm putting into my RESP or whatever it is it going to fossil fuels? And I don't want it to, and put it into something else, or I'll take it to another banking institution. And we need to start having that conversation. And once more and more people go to their banks and say, I don't want my money going to this, then they'll start hearing it and start to invest in green energy, which they're doing a little of, but not enough.
And there's several banks that are maybe more notorious than others.
There's a number of them that are
supporting the fossil fuels, or the CNIB, and I have read a whole bunch of them. Also,
yeah, so there's a lot of them worldwide. So there's they call them the Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
If you look up banking on climate chaos, there's a report that comes out worldwide every year that talks about what banks are invested in things, who are the worst ones, who puts the most into coal, and what exactly they invest in and how much they invest. It's amazingly detailed work. And in 2022, RBC was the biggest investor in fossil fuels in the world. All five Canadian banks, plus the Bank of Canada, are invested in fossil fuels.
And the Bank of Montreal as well.
Bank of Montreal, CIBC, Toronto Dominion, they're all invested in fossil fuels. And they all had an equal share in that Trans Mountain pipeline. You can look it up and you can see they each had, I don't know, $250 million each or something like that. It wasn't just RBC, but RBC is way up there.
I respect your attempts to conserve as much as possible, but I mean, there's also the fact that the military, which is they're building up for wars as we speak, and that burns up a lot of carbon dioxide. And
sure.
I don't think there are the same kinds of restrictions on military activities as there are on, you know, you and me trying to save money. I mean, does it maybe discourage you in a way that all of that, you know, the fossil fuels that are saved through the efforts you're putting in are, you know, used up by the military? I mean, is that one of the things that kind of throws you a little bit into dismay?
Well, it's interesting. Like, I think everything that we do helps, right? So every little drop of something helps. So, but I also, when you say that, I was just going through this book the other day called Fire Weather. It's all about the fire in by John Violent. He's from D.C. Valent. Anyway, it's about the Fort McMurray fire. And he talks about what it takes to produce the oil or the whatever it is that's coming out of the tar sands. And what he says is 1/3 of all the natural gas that Canada uses gets used to develop that stuff that's coming out of the tar sands. So if that's not discouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here we are trying to cut back bit by bit, and then there's this big, big production using all kinds of natural resources and natural gas and government subsidies to produce this stuff that they have to clean with all our fresh water, and they have to put it, you know, and it's bitumen. It comes out, it's like tar. It's mind-boggling, and it is discouraging. And the more we do, the better off we are, right?
Of course, yeah. But I mean, you had Trump earlier this year in his inaugural address. He's saying is the answers to problems with inflation and high costs are tariffs and drill, baby, drill.
So there are huge challenges. That's for sure. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's when you talk about high costs, what is driving high costs is climate, right? Because we're getting droughts in areas that can't and that can no longer produce what they are producing. Olive oil, right? Olive trees are all kinds of things. Napa Valley. The wine heart, like all these kinds of things that we rely on are going to get more and more expensive because the weather and the climate just can't support growing food. And that's the main thing that scares me, right? You know, and the fact that there's less and less bees to pollinate,
and I think part of the reason why there are less bees, this has also to do with 5G, 5G towers that are known to affect insects. And I have noticed the bees are smaller, much smaller, although some places have a lot of bees in some areas of the city. But where I live, the bees are smaller and not as many. It's not a good sign for sure. But Linda, I think we're going to have to. This is a very. We have to have you on again because this is a topic that has to become part of a conversation, part of our understanding of how to live on this planet. And it's a shifting of consciousness that's taking place. And I want to thank you for joining us, but I think you might have a song that you wanted to share from the Raging Grannies, perhaps. Mm. What happened?
Oh, I think we just lost her.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, well. Well,
how did that happen?
it just cut out all of a sudden.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the Raging Grannies.
Yes, Linda was going to sing a song.
Oh, she was going to sing it on air.
Oh, I believe so. She was going to. She suggested that song.
Okay.
I guess with this.
What song?
Yeah.
Well. Maybe I'll just play some of the theme for this show, and we can kind of work it out.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So.
Lost you. Are you there?
I know. It said everyone else had left the call.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is some very interesting things happening this morning. But maybe I was wondering if you would like to share your song. I think I had a song from the Raging Grannies.
Sure, yeah. I'm a raging granny because I'm just raging about everything.
Good for you.
Let me see. Yeah, and so we go out to a number of things, not just around climate, but around all kinds of issues like housing and peace, you know, those kinds of things that we try to stand for. So this song, I'll sing a couple verses, but it's called Leave It in the Ground, and it's written by Nancy Walker, who's from Winnipeg. And, I'll just go for it. It's better when there's more grannies, but whatever. I can do it on my own.
That'll be great.
Leave it in the ground. Leave it in the ground. Fossil fuel is poison. Leave it in the ground.
First you drill for oil, send it through a pipeline, then the pipeline breaks and oil's everywhere. Then the water's poisoned, fish and birds are dying, fossil fuel is poison, leave it in the ground, leave it in the ground, leave it in the ground. Fossil fuel is poison, leave it in the ground. Politicians whine, we need oil for job creation. Tell them there'll be jobs in the green economy. Tell them you love solar. Tell them you're for wind power. Write them all a letter. Leave it in the ground. Leave it in the ground. Leave it in the ground. Fossil fuel is poison. Leave it in the ground.
Well, that's very nice. Well, I want to thank you so much, Linda, for joining us this morning. It has been fun talking to you, and also is very, very educational. And
great conversation and shared passion for the well-being of the earth.
Yes, and we'll have to talk about this some more and have you on at another time in the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Take care,
Thanks,
Linda.
Thanks, both of you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Down way. I didn't even give the acknowledgement statement, which
dear.
I normally do, but on Wooden Spoons we acknowledge that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Cree Ojibwe, Ojibwe Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge that Shoal Lake, the Shoal Lake No. 40 First Nation, we acknowledge them for its life-giving water. So I have a bit of information to share and a recipe. Maybe I'll just start off with some of the things we should be aware of and to try to avoid in when we are eating. So one of the big concerns that affects our food is the herbicide glyphosate. Glyphosate is a very commonly used herbicide, has been for quite some time. Thanks to Monsanto, not now Bayer, that herbicide has been used in many, many crops across Canada, and it is poisonous to the monarch butterfly, but it is also a contaminant in our food. And so when we're eating food that's commonly grown, we are going to be consuming this pesticide. So it has harmful effects on people. And I'm just trying to cover some of those things. One of the things that glyphosate is connected to is Alzheimer's disease. So Alzheimer's disease is a pathology that often affects older people, and so glyphosate is something that it has a widespread distribution, and it means that almost everyone is exposed to glyphosate regularly, whether through the food they eat, the air they breathe, or their immediate surroundings. So it's the ubiquitous nature of glyphosate makes it very challenging to control and mitigate it. Since glyphosate exposure is widespread and it crosses the blood-brain barrier to accelerate Alzheimer's pathology, you will need to take practical steps to protect your brain and cellular health, so that there are certain dietary things that you can do to lessen your dangers of getting Alzheimer's disease. One of them, of course, would be to switch to organic foods. And immediately you will reduce your glyphosate exposure, especially when you're eating grains and legumes and those, you know, just regular produce. And research shows that people who eat organic have significantly lower glyphosate levels in their bodies. And especially when you're using wheat products, it's particularly used on these products as a pre-harvest drying agent as well. Glyphosate has the effect of damaging the gut microbiome and increases intestinal permeability. So that refers to the fact that intestinal permeability refers to the cells lining the intestine they form gaps, and they allow other things to enter the bloodstream that shouldn't be there. Things that are not digested can enter the bloodstream. So this creates a lot of difficulties. So you have to rebuild your gut health by consuming probiotic-rich foods. They're foods with a lot of microorganisms in them, and supporting beneficial bacteria that they have, these probiotic foods. However, another thing that was a bit surprising to me to learn is that having excessive consumption of polyunsaturated fatty acids, linoleic acid is one example, it disrupts the body's mitochondrial function, reducing cellular energy and further disrupting gut health. Now, polyunsaturated fats are supported by mainstream nutrition as being the healthy fats, because they are mainstream nutrition has, I'm not sure if they still take that stance, but they have always considered saturated fats as being the cause of arterial buildup and plaques in the arteries, and so polyunsaturated fats are recommended. However, saturated fats is not the culprit. It's hydrogenated fats that are. And when you hydrogenate fats, you're taking a polyunsaturated fat, adding some hydrogens where the oxygen double bond is. But in that process, it changes the shape of the molecule, where that from the natural cis form to what they call the trans form, so it forms a sort of a bump, and then the shape means everything in biology. So you get problems with plaque buildup. Cholesterol is a healthful substance in your body that comes to the rescue whenever there is some challenge. And when there's a challenge of something that's not right with the things that are going into the arteries, it'll try to come to protect it. And so that's one of the things that goes on. So in reducing your environmental exposure is another thing that you can do by minimizing contact with glyphosate in your environment. Use natural lawn care methods instead of herbicides, because herbicides contain glyphosate. And filter your drinking water with systems certified to remove glyphosate, and wash all produce thoroughly, even organic items, due to cross-contamination. I will try to squeeze in a recipe today.
That's good.
It's been a morning. Yeah. Green scrambled tofu. Now, I don't usually recommend tofu because it does have an anti-nutrient in it that prevents you from absorbing certain amino acids. But if you're using it, you know, not a lot, it can be a wonderful food. One package of tofu crumbled, 1 to 2 tablespoons of Bragg or soy sauce, turmeric to taste, pepper to taste, dried oregano to taste, a splash of olive oil, 6 to 8 green olives chopped, a handful of sun-dried tomatoes chopped, a half a cup of spinach chopped. And so in a large saucepan, you add the tofu, the brags, the turmeric, pepper, and oregano, and you put a splash of oil in there and sauté on medium heat for 12 minutes until the moisture has evaporated. Then you add the olives, the sun-dried tomatoes, and spinach. You cover and cook for 2 to 4 minutes, until the spinach is tender. And you can serve with toast and hash browns. So this sounds like a very easy, delicious food to have. And so we now have come to the end of our program with its ups and downs this morning.
Sure.
I want to thank Linda Trono for being our guest, and thank you, Michael, for managing this, for navigating the difficulties.
Yeah, it's been rough for a little, but we got our interview out there,
yeah.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you, Mary Jane. And listeners, you've been listening to Wooden Spoons. By the way, the temperature now is minus 11 degrees Celsius. So it's been this Wooden Spoons is sponsored by the Mary Jane Cooking School, Inc., on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. If you didn't catch some of the things we were talking about today, please visit the show. It will be set there. They'll have Wooden Spoons